Blog Talk Radio.
Second day of the year, so we only have 303 days left. 16 days to the March equinox, wherever we are on the planet, whether we're looking at the onset of fall or spring, depends on your perspective, which end is up. And it's a pleasure, a place for contemplative minds to have an opportunity to talk, to listen, to enjoy each other's company through an airwave. Old school, I have to admit, but one that allows us certain potentials that perhaps other media do not. Whether you appreciate that or not, that's strictly up to you. It's much the same as the rigor of the Masonic Order. I'm very pleased to. I just to do a little shout out to our listeners, particularly Canada first and foremost, because that's where we're coming from, and listeners from Uganda and Philippines and India. Of Brazil, thank you for your faithful participation. France, the listeners from France, and the UK as well. China has joined us. We have listeners tuning in. South Korea, Austria, occasionally, yeah. People from Austria are listening in. And hope I haven't forgotten anyone. That would be very unfortunate. USA, yeah, they're there in their numbers. An international audience, to say the very least. Common purpose, always that which galvanizes us. The ideas. I feel a little weary at times. The persistence of jingoism these days, you know, that in the background there's that threat of military action or military resolution. I find that tedious after a while, that it has to, it seems to, for some cultures, a way of bracketing their communication with the world. Here, it's a solace, it's some comfort. We not necessarily have a meeting of the minds, but be able to praise the examination of ideas. And to do that, we know that we need to be thoughtful and reasonable with one another. And this seems to, for us, it's not that we start the day as milquetoast, you know, that middle of the ground thinking, but somehow the process of Masonry, the values, you know, support for our countries, support for the constitution of our order, it brings about a tranquility, brings about a happiness, it brings about a participation, it endorses our willingness to make our communities a better place. And yet, it doesn't render us stupid. We're not thoughtless. This is the rebuttal, in a lot of ways, to those nations, the governments that, and this is in no way simply a Me Too kind of a thought. There are places and times when we realize that people have a low, and governments and people in authority have a low opinion of us. And it's happened with, you know, religions that don't necessarily trust and want to contain and control. Some people in positions of authority do the same. No, this transcends that type of thinking, and we look beyond that to the greater good, the common purpose. And the common purpose in justifying the means isn't quite the way we go about our business. So here we're looking at the means being important. And yes, we do have a humanist philosophy, but one that we attempt to include. We want this to be the more inclusive than less. We want to see and we look for what we have in common with all people. And we are constantly being reinvented, constantly. Your history, where you are and where you came from, and your people and the influences on you are much different than anybody else. It's the uniqueness. Realizing that we have some type of control and order, and realizing the struggles that go on around us for equality and some sense of expression of our human rights doesn't necessarily feed well to this doesn't play well in this kind of an environment with people that are looking for an excuse to try and be violent, or this doesn't work. That has nothing to do with us. This is about respect, and a belief that the greatest ideas in the face of the earth over time have never been stamped out. The good ideas, they continue. They thrive for many reasons. They meet that test of common sense. So we've seen what happens when there is an effort to suppress cultures, or you know, we see what goes on when genocide occurs, and we see the result, the shame, the degradation. Together, we can accomplish great things. Only it stretches the imagination, because some of these things have not occurred, and it's unusual for us to think that we can connect with people that we don't know literally, but know figuratively, with common purpose. Masonry is like that globally, because we know, you and I know, when we meet somebody and realize one another are Masons, there's something familiar about that person. Something common about that person. I suppose the more paranoid around us will say, aha, there, gotcha, you're up to no good. Well, that's not what makes us get up in the morning and pull our socks up. See, philosophies of Masonry also include this little envelope that, once open and unpacked, encourages us to get involved, to demonstrate it by our behavior. I think it's one of the beautiful Buddhist aspects of Freemasonry. You don't just sort of sit there and ponder your navel, try to understand the our nature, the nature of the universe. we can do that many ways. We can do that while we're being industrious, while we're contributing. In fact, some people like me, and maybe some of you, may believe that the way to those answers of self-reflection come through our industry. Now, I do like this little caveat. Comes from the Confucian time. To carry on my day without causing inconvenience for any person is a goal. And I thought that was such a gentle embrace. It was, and it was not that you do it because somebody's telling you. Those people we want to pack up, you know, those kind of listeners, those people generally don't tune into this kind of a program. No, this is about having the sense of style and conduct yourself as a gentle person, one of awareness, with the bearing and awareness. This is the urbane, you know, that not so much the swagger and hubris, but the consciousness of position. My friend Jerry was from New York City, and we met during university. Really lovely man, a very, very deep kind of a thinker, but lovely, you know, with his beautiful Brooklyn accent, New York accent. And he would tell me about going into the music stores in New York, where nobody jumped up to their feet and ran to you trying to hype up the latest sale. It was like, hey, how you doing, you know, if you need anything, you know, and just go and wander, go and look. If you had a question, come up and ask. Cool. You know, everybody got it. Everybody got it. There's no need for all that pressure. You know, what are you doing? Just sit and relax. When you're relaxed, we get to reflect. That pressure from the day, I have to do everything in split second, and, you know, time is money. Sorry, this isn't the place for you, really. This is a place where for the time we're together, you take your watch and you put it in your pocket. You turn off your cell phone and declare that there's no other place you'd rather be than in this company. We have some really interesting music for you, I think. And one of those, you're going to have to help me with this commentary today. This is a life choice. It's about a life choice. That which is meaningful. So we'll get into that in a little bit, and we'll continue to look at symbolism. I'm chuffed about the response to Masonic effects. Of course, you know, we're being discovered after, 11 years. I always think of that, like, you know, the journeyman musicians that you see, and you think, oh, they're just, that's, you know, why don't they have a big contract? Why are they, you know, living the life? And you find that there's so many of those people that are just so talented. And do you need the branding of the major box stores to tell you that something is good? Here, check this out. This will tell you, this is a tune called Stardust. And it's by two people that Paul Desmond and Jerry Mulligan. Jerry Mulligan was one of the first jazz musicians when I was a little boy that I would listen to, that deep resonant saxophone. Why Jerry Mulligan of all the musicians? Who knows? Who knows? Check this out. It's called Stardust. Thank you. Desmond and Jerry Mulligan on tenor and alto sax. We're going to sit back for a minute, top up your beverage, if it's your tea or your coffee. I want you to have an opportunity to close your eyes and to take a deep breath and to join me. Connect with some ideas that we have here. And if you're sipping something that helps you to relax or that you like, whatever that is, if it's that hooch that you've been creating in the stream in the Midlands of Prince Edward Island, yeah, okay. If it's a good cup of espresso from, your favorite cafe, put on your earbuds or your headphones and sit back and you can have a private thought without anybody necessarily trying to read you. It's like, let them do the work themselves. This is a commentary called The Life Choice. I named it A Life Choice, Chasing That Which Is Expedient. That which is meaningful. Oh, so the listeners that have all the answers and have examined everything, you know, there's the door. All it takes is panic for the things sacred about our communities to be exchanged for what is expedient. Panic. We know making decisions formed by panic causes injury that endures. The bookmarks of history tell a continuing tale. Where complacency takes root, the conditions of panic thrive. Where panic thrives, decline is not far behind. However lofty our beliefs, however clear our thinking in periods of calm, we will be challenged as masons when we stand out from the crowd, keeping control of our emotions when those around us are unable to do so. This is where the secrecy of our community gains its reputation. When joining the crowd is expected, craftsmen are taught to quietly go about their business, being unassuming, understanding that they understand a dynamic process that the crowd does not. Easier for them, as us, to follow expedient thinking. Diplomatic of us to control when and how we react, or even if we react. Contrary to bullish opinion, when we do not know what to do, doing nothing is preferable to mistakes. If you are not with us, you are against us. If you do not understand us, then you stand in front of us. Aggressive, patriotic. Jingoism is the virus of emotional thought. Today we are listening. We are in front of a mob. In the fracas, we say and do what is expedient to survive. The other option, the road less traveled, is to not allow yourself to be in that position. But know this. Masonry is about self-development. It is not a singular idea, but a process. At the end, we will know intuitively if we have made ethical decisions or blocked and forefollowed the flock. We will know precisely when we are rationalizing our behavior. And we will judge ourselves kindly for it because we are a Mason. And we will begin to comprehend the distinction between expedient and meaningful life. Linger over this with Che Sha. This is a bit of China for us here. Jazz, huh? Called the Ask Me Now. Thelonious Monk would be pleased with that cover, and I love the background. You know, how decadent! I think that's wonderful to be able to be there with your friends, listening to this playing in the background. I'm taking a leap here and thinking this is the house band. So you go and you have a beer with your friends, but listen to this kind of music playing. Wow, quite decadent. Somebody's got to do it. Absolutely. We're it's a bit masonry in this respect. It's a bit like seeing a little person with a paintbrush and paints. But you know, when we're very, very small, we're still developing those neural pathways that make those connections. So, you know, it's hard for us to, we in our minds, we're more capable than our bodies. We're capable, we understand what we want to do, but we just don't have those neural links with all the muscles that will give us that grip on the brush and allow us to manipulate the darn thing and put it, you know, just hit the brush end into the pot of paint. Oh, we're just enjoying the fact that we can move this hand when we want it to move, and we can make it scribble, and we're delighted seeing the splash of color on the paper, or even better, when we can have that tactile experience and put our hands in the paint. Then, you know, those are learning pathways, and it happens. Not because that little brain is incapable. It just takes a bit of time because the end result is complicated. It's just complicated. So it takes a little while. And we don't progress necessarily in uniform ways. But take that brush and start to show and paint beside the child and show them what they're capable of doing. Then we create a question. The child, depending on their personality and their early age, can become quite discouraged. Why this big person can do this and I can't. So we want to be mindful of the vulnerability. That's why we don't ever challenge our children as if they're not as quick or smart as us. That's just us being ridiculous. Of course, we have more experience, but the clumsiest way of trying to teach somebody is by bragging about one's own abilities. That's not a teacher. That's somebody that's expressing. That's hubris. Go somewhere else. We don't need that around a talent. Around talent, what we need is not the praise. And you've heard us, we've talked about the toxicity of praise in the Masonic events. You're wonderful in every way. That stops creativity and it stops effort. Your hard work is showing your work has improved significantly. That's an endorsement of how you achieve. People that receive praise and get used to it aren't the headliners. They're not the first violin. It's the person that's been taught and reinforced with the idea that dedication and diligence will help them to improve. But it's that tonality. Do you have that ear for the tonality so you can shape the note to express an emotion? That's where mathematics flows into philosophy, doesn't it? Oh, don't come pitchforks and torches chasing me down the lane. They go and yell at Bertrand Russell and his ilk. The logicists, we've crossed that barrier and been able to articulate that much better than me, as you can tell. So this is where we can do this. We become self-taught, self-learners as we reach adulthood, because we find we can still be inspired by things that come to us out of our imagination, whether it's that small plant growing in the crack in concrete in this desolate place, or the butterfly going over a landfill site caught on the summer breeze. There's small things that we notice, is the crash of the waves on a shore, or the sound of the leaves when the wind is picking up. Are you prone to the subtlety of life? Not everybody is. One thing is certain, though. We like, as creatures, we like to do things together, and we like to accomplish goals together. And together, when we're working in larger numbers, we can accomplish more, but it requires this notion of like-mindedness. And we find that we're unable to force learning. Oh, there will be those that say that's not true, and they will have proof. This, what we're talking about, is reaching into the imagination of the child, the imagination of the artist, so that all of a sudden they're innovating, they're showing us. Where the student becomes the master. I may be a very good student all my life, but I will always appreciate the students around that have that je ne sais quoi. Always. And not everybody does. For some, it's just background music while we're having a drink. Well, I don't know. What do you say? What do you say? There's this takes me to back to some stuff by that menace, my nemesis, William Leslie Wilmshurst. He was born in 1867, the same year that Canada was formed under its colonial powers, and then went about its little business, being the best little colonialist we could possibly be. Thank goodness that has come to an end. But the sense of loyalty now is the birth of nationhood. So this is Wilmshurst work. I just want to take you to some of his most fascinating ideas. That came down to this little book, and it's around the position and possibilities of the Masonic Order. This is what you are doing as you're going about your ritual, as you're going about the acts of organizing people to contribute to charity, whether successful or not. There's whether the people are, you know, sensitive and in tune, whether they can handle a narrative that's different than what they came in with. Well, not everybody can. And that sense of disappointment, instead of talking about it, and asking questions, I'm making assumptions. This is like an assembly line. We just run them through. And somebody was, I'm thinking, well, really, that's sort of somebody that's been, you know, had an ouchie, very uncomfortable within his own skin. But every time I see the fellow, he's a hurt person. He's sad. His expectations aren't being met, but it's not the expectations of the world around, as we know. It's that self-loathing, perhaps. We talk about over the years, authority trying to demand things of Masons, and it's not working, so they have to recoil. So that sense of the use and abuse of authority is not alien to us. It's not a purposeful in Masonry, but it is to large organizations. We wrestle, you would think that an order based on a process of philosophy and the expression of that philosophy would have transcended control and command issues. Would it be looking more at the influence and power of the order, not being in the Constitution, but the translation of that Constitution in the breast of each and every member? How asking the question, very forthright, and I think brilliantly asking the question, do we add value to the experience of that person? And in some cases, by asking that question, we know that the reason is that we suspect that we're not. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's so, but it means that there's that flavor of that audacious nature, striving to do something a little better tomorrow than what we did today, just slightly in some way. And even when we're not sure what it is, we talk about it. Well, for a long time, I've talked about how we have been shy about the use of imagination. I think we're based on the work of dreamers. You had to have a dream that the status quo could change and have some sense of order to it that was understandable. So what do our common sense dreamers tell us today? Those things are not coterminous. They are coterminous, yeah. We look in the mirror to find the answers. And how do we instill that sense of freshness? Well, we don't have the same challenges in form that our order did in the 15th and 16th century, not by far. Intellectually we may, and philosophically we've evolved quite a bit. These major epochs in history around a particular part of Europe and Britain were not the bee's knees. There were in other parts of the world, there were significant changes in the expression of ideas, and at different times. Largely because progress is an imperfect kind of an event. It's not today we're going to be brilliant. Today we're going to be reformers. It comes in fits and spurts, and it's ongoing. Oh, dear me. That to it fits, the leadership fit, all leaders fit with this kind of thinking, except those that are a bit, you know, they're a bit damaged. Those are people that require our care. They don't stop the gentleness of masonry. They never stop it. It goes on. All of these things that are around mankind go on in spite of the efforts to repress these ideas, in spite of it, because that's the power. The example that we have every week on Masonic Effects is the music. What greater, and I often believe this, the greatest response to aggression is success. The greatest reaction to repression is success. Jazz is success in a nation of where racism was rampant. You think about it. As soon as the people were walking back from the fields as slaves, they were making music. They stole those private moments to create music. And we're listening to the introduction, the horn playing of Louis Armstrong, without really necessarily every single time thinking about the fact that he couldn't stay in certain hotels where he was performing, where he was referred to in ruthlessly terrible terms. And yet, what do we see? That enduring smile and this enduring beautiful music. And today, you know, that effort, that's not because of a nation. That's because of a people within that nation. That recreation, the innovation, could not be killed, could not be threatened. And in fact, it was unexpected. Couldn't contain this kind of brilliance. Even today, we're listening this day to jazz from the keyboards in China, and we'll be listening to a little bit more from Belgium and France. But predominantly, I like the fact that we can endorse and acknowledge the many musicians of color who prevailed and created a phenomena. Freemasonry is that phenomena. We're not supposed to be able to do the things that we're doing. We're supposed to be falling apart. We're supposed to be in need of order and discipline. We're supposed to. This is not the way that organization is supposed to exist. We're supposed to exist for profit. We're supposed to exist for nationalist reasons. This tilts the balance into some type of social reform. That sense, it tips the balance into that sense of a willing participation and support of our neighbors, that we live in harmony and don't create inconvenience for anybody, whether it's by the expression of our individual faith. The compromise here is that we have the ability to go about our faith in whatever way we feel is important to us, but not at the expense of others around us. So that notion of the dominance of the world, suck that up. Because think of it, like everybody's doing the same thing. Uh-huh. Everybody thinks that their way of thinking is the right one. So suck it up, Buttercup. This is no way to be acting. Masonry, it comes along and it's like it's floating. Oh, well, you know, how do you stamp it out? Well, it's not like a flame. And And what's it doing? It's so nasty. It's contributing to, things that are quite sentimental. That family in need, the widow, the children. And it's not that it's competing. We don't compete with service clubs. Go about our business and self-fund and some research. Well, we're funding some kind of interesting research. And the question isn't why are we doing that. It's not necessarily popular, but it's always the right thing to do. We don't just do things because they're trendy in the moment. It's like there's some serious stuff going. There's some serious science going on, and we need to be able to support it. We're not looking for quick fix headlines. Oh, that's the influence of mastery. We're the group that wants you to pack away your control and command issues, put them in a box. You may need them sometime for whatever reason, you know. Pull out that box when you need to shore up the car when you're changing a tire, I suppose. The papers here were collected. I'm reading about some stuff from Wilmhurst. This is papers that were, collected by members of the United Grand Lodge of England. Now, all of the subversives out there, get your pens out and listen closely. There's nothing subversive in any of this. The papers were offered the best spirit of fraternity and goodwill. Yeah, that's it. Good time, sit down and have a meal, laugh and enjoy company. Kid each other. Can you kid? I don't mean like, I have to laugh on cue. I mean, relax, you know, like you do when you're around your friends. It's true, that kind of trust, it does exist. Absolutely true. They've been written, these papers were written with a view to promoting a deeper understanding of the meaning of masonry. And through that, the work of the order is to help people arrive at a deeper understanding of themselves. And that means you take a look and understand the influences and responsibilities going on around us. Oh, well, I don't like it. Well, do I understand it? And how do we improve on that? Well, as much as I don't like some of the antics of politicians. They have a very low impression of people generally. I do admire the fact that, globally, there's been a reduction in poverty over the past 10 years, a remarkable reduction. It's not completely done, but it's trending. It's moving in that direction. And the goal, as far-fetched as it may seem, is in spite of the dog-eat-dog mentality of capitalism, to help people rise up out of dire poverty, people living on less than a dollar a day, people living in war zones. So it means adjustments. It means adjustments, keeping the faith and being aware, being well-informed. The meaning of masonry is a subject usually left entirely unexpounded, and that accordingly remains largely unrealized by its members, save such a few as make it to their private study. The authorities of what in all other aspects is an elaborately organized and admirably controlled community have hitherto made no provision for explaining and teaching the noble science, which masonry proclaims itself to be and was certainly designed to impart. It seems taken for granted that reception into the order will automatically be accompanied by an ability to appreciate forthwith and at its full value all that one there finds. Bring you into the order, the knowledge is instant. Really? I didn't notice that instant moment, did you? The contrary is the case. Masonry is veiled and cryptic expression of the difficult science of spiritual life and the understanding of it calls for special and informed guidance on the one hand, and on the other, a genuine and earnest desire for knowledge, and no small capacity for spiritual perception on the part of those seeking to be instructed. And not infrequently, one finds brethren discontinuing their interest or their membership because they find that Masonry means nothing to them, and that no explanation or guidance is vouchsafed them. So we need a little bit of Masonic effects, just a little. We face a puddle that Isaac Newton, the father of science, was standing in when he printed Principia. The alchemist, first and foremost, history is, you know, we've progressed. Our historians, we haven't censored the historians. They find new information. So we find that he was a staunch alchemist. Oh, yeah, okay. So you're looking at lead to gold. But there was also, and I think legitimately, a metaphor. What was this doing? What was the quest for immortality? Was it a quest for immortality of the soul, of the principles of humanity? Here's a little bit of Ben Webster from Stormy Weather. This is from Copenhagen. It's a live performance in 1965. That's Kenny Drew on piano, Nils Pettersson on bass, and Alex Reel on drums. Smoking. Thank you. ain't bad for 1965, is it? No, certainly not. Certainly not. Just a little more, never ending, eh? About the symbolism of Masonry, as if we had to find, or we did, we noticed that there were ways of teaching volumes of material in a gesture. The Neanderthals did this in caves. Their paintings, earliest paintings, tell us stories about their lives. A few bits of a pigment, an animal, a person, a situation, a hunter, tells us all kinds of things about the importance of what was important in the development of religious practices in the early days of human form. Masonry picked up on the value of symbolism, and we've accumulated what I'd like to think is an encyclopedic knowledge of the meaning of the symbols, but that encyclopedia has been not made available. So is there any one person that understands the work? Well, no. We begin by asking ourselves what these different things mean. And we don't do, we're not forced to do that. It's just that when you're in a place where there's a preponderance of symbolism and you don't ask the questions, you're not aware, you're never going to need those answers. You're never going to be insightful enough to feel left out. So go about your business. For some, those symbols leap off the walls. They are conveying layers of information and layers of history. And we have this compelling sense, question, that they are something, they have something to do with self-development, the development of us. So when we're learning about the ancients, whether it's the ancient Jewish cults or the Egyptians or whatever it is, the Hindi symbols that we bring forward, the values are expressed in different ways in different volumes of the sacred texts. Unless we're scholars in all of them, we may not know that, but to presume that only our book is the host of those that kind of value-laden statements is short-sighted. Here, some thought had to be given to the use of uniform dress and badge. And think about it. How did the uniformity come about? Both in the indication of membership and of the grade. This is where transferability was an issue, where you went beyond the group where everybody was your mate, where you knew everybody. How would we be able to recognize if everything was just very loose and idiosyncratic? How would we possibly know see the similarities? Well, there's some thought had to be given. In the same way, the application of a moral principle through the medium of an aspect of that trade, masonry, meant the use of materials and implements of the trade. In time, the implements would come to represent the principle, and it was an easy progress to look for other illustrations to remind the younger members of the tenets of the craft. Hence, the use of the beehive as a constant inspiration to industry, and of the serpent to represent the attribute of wisdom, so much to be desired. The 18th century, the 1700s, was a period of enlightenment when philosophy was in vogue through Europe, and it adaptly named the Age of Reason. Freemasonry does not live in a vacuum. It is influenced by and is part of the world stage at every age, and as a philosophical movement, it is not surprising that it rose and developed to such an extent during this particular time in history. Here's a little piece by J.R. Clark from his Prestonian lecture from 1969 that he called The External Influences on the Evolution of English Masonry. The inevitably great influence of contemporaneous thought and events on its evolution. In commenting on the lecture, Alex Horn wrote about this development period. First, we note the general interest in architecture and antiquities, which somehow tied the one to the other, and which gave the young man on his grand tour an intimate contact with European architecture, especially the ecclesiastical, and perhaps some insight into its symbolical character with its moral, religious, and philosophical implications. Then we note the birth, or perhaps only the prominent development, of a literature devoted to religious, mystical, and occult thought, mostly of an allegorical character, Kabbalistic, Rosicrucian, alchemical, hermetic influences emanating from the Gnostic and pre-Platonic periods, and religious thinking from the heretical schools. And here was the purely intellectual and scientific influence of the Royal Society, and the philosophical writings of Hobbes and Hume and Locke and Francis Bacon. All this must have caused a ferment of thought and inspiration from which the newly aborning speculative spirit could not have insulated itself had it tried to do so. Excellent. Now, if you're at a part of the world that wasn't in that neighborhood of Hobbes and Hume or the Gnostics, there will be aspects of that those findings where you are. We're talking about universals, the universality of these ideas. And next time we'll get together, I'll talk just a little bit about the end of the 18th century. This is the end of a period where thought was evolving, as it always does, right up to today. And now we have a history far, far more enriched than military conquest. Far, far more. Now this global community is looking at the quality of a life. Oh, my goodness. Don't ever tell anyone that kind of examination is a Masonic value. Everybody will run for their tortured pitchfork. Today it's been an absolute pleasure having you here. I'm so pleased that you've taken a few moments from your day or night to join us and have this discussion. Give me your impressions. Certainly, I need your genius here. I have no clue about most of this stuff. You can get in touch with us at Masonic Effects, one word, FX, MasonicFX @gmail.com. I hope until we meet again, that you're committing those random acts of Masonic kindness. It's just the best, isn't it? This is from a performer called Keiko. You'll like this. It's, yeah. Darn those Japanese women, eh? talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening.